Hey everybody, welcome to another Recovery Radio broadcast recorded live at the Leyta Recovery Center in downtown Moscow. You can reach the Leyta Recovery Center by phone at 208-883-1045, and you can reach them by email at leytarecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can also find them on the web at leytarecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. And Recovery Radio is all about getting the words of recovery out into the world, helping people to find their way into recovery and tell the stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, strength, and hope for continuing recovery. And I've got just a couple announcements today before we dive in with our guest. And first of all is the upcoming fundraiser for the Leyta Recovery Center. It will be on March 2nd. And as we did last year, we'll be having a breakfast at 7 a.m. and a dessert seating at 7 p.m. So there's any time during the day you can get in. That would be great. We're looking for table captains, and what a table captain is just someone who will try and get between 4 and 8 people to sit at their table. Basically, all you have to do is ask people to come. They get a free breakfast or a free dessert. It was really good last year. Then they, hopefully they might be able to throw a little money down. Last year we raised a little over $40,000, and that is about just under 50% of our operating budget. So a good turnout is always a good thing. We will be following any sort of protocol for COVID as things develop. As of right now, we're in the same state that the city is in with minimal distancing and no mask requirements specifically. But we'll update you on that as we get closer to the date. And again, that's March 2nd at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And if you want more information, email Daryl Keim at leytarecoverycenter@gmail.com. He can get you set up as a table captain, or you can just sign up to be at a table, and we'll group you in with a bunch of other really cool people like yourself that want to help. The only other announcement today is to let you know that our Artist in Residence program is up and running. We have the application and the call information on our website, leytarecoverycenter.org. And all you have to do is go to the homepage, and at the top, you click on the tab that says Artist in Residence. It'll give you the call information and the information for applying. There's a $500 stipend that goes along with this residency, along with a show and reception at the end of each artist residency. And we're going to have 3 residencies this year, which is new for us. So we want people to apply. The deadline for the first residency is February 11th. But if you can't get it in by then, or maybe you want one of the later residencies, just put your app in. State which residency you want. It will be March to May, June to August, and September to November. And that's about all I got today. And I am Radio Johnny. I am a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And my partner in the studio is...
Yeah, I'm Denise, and I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and also grateful to be in recovery today from addiction.
Fantastic. And our guest in the studio today is a friend of mine, and his name is Corey. Corey, welcome.
Welcome,
hey,
Corey.
Hey, everybody. Hey, I'm just your average old alcoholic drug addict that somehow doesn't do that stuff anymore. So
cool. Well, hey, why don't you share with us, Corey, kind of what it was like in your addiction, what happened to... turn the lights on for you, and what it's like now.
All right. Well, thanks, Johnny, and thank you guys for having
glad you're here.
It's kind of crazy to think I'd be here. Just before I get started, I just want to share a story. There was a time in my life where I was like, you know, the homeless guy walking around on the streets. And man, you know, talk about a rough time. You know, you gotta, you know, you're searching, you're always trying to get, you know, what you need to get through that day of food, drugs, staying warm. And man, I just, you know, you're just getting stuck in my own head. All I had with me was this little handheld FM AM radio, and I just listened to that thing constantly. You know, if there, you know, I definitely needed the things I needed to get through the day, but part of that was batteries. And I remember just listening, you know, sometimes it was just right wing, you know, just crazy radio that I've never even heard since, you know, that actually kind of sounded like ads for an oil company, but you know what I mean, just something to keep passing the time. And you know, from that day, I always thought it'd be kind of cool to have, you know, be on a radio show or something. So this is like the first time I ever got to do something like that. So that's kind of a weird, you know, just introduction. You know, I wasn't really like, I didn't just like start out like all messed up. You know, I was a pretty just normal kid, but I'd start getting in like little amounts of trouble at school. Like for some reason, I like traded a four square ball on and recess for some kids' cookies, and I got in trouble for that. I couldn't figure out why that was wrong. You know, I should be able to do whatever I want with my four square ball, right? It's kind of this kind of attitude that just followed me through my entire life. You know, some kid would do something that I didn't think was very cool, so I'd push him. It didn't seem like that big of a deal, but it, you know, and I'd keep going, and I keep going doing all this stuff. And I joined the wrestling team because my dad wanted me to be on the wrestling team, just like he wanted me to be a baseball player. The problem was I wasn't very good at baseball, and I didn't really like wrestling. And I, it was about a freshman year in high school, and that's when I decided that I was going to live, you know, entirely by my own rules, you know. And that's really when I started to, you know, had that first drink at a party. I forget the lady's house, but, you know, her parents were gone. And, man, that was the best Coors Light I think I ever drank. I don't think they ever tasted that good again. But, you know, I just instantly was getting in trouble. You know, have a drink, you know, it's kind of a crazy thing because I bring all this alcohol to a party and I end up getting in really big trouble because somebody almost drinks too much alcohol and dies. Like it's all fun and games, you know, having some beers with your friends. But it was kind of weird to, you know, literally get in trouble like almost the first time you get drunk, and to think that maybe you know, maybe if I was a normal person, maybe I'd think it was a good idea not to do that again. And it just didn't work out that way. But, you know, so I cheated my way through high school. I did learn some valuable lessons, you know, now that I'm sober. I think it's actually harder to cheat the classes than it is to just study. I mean, I had to put extreme amounts of work, you know, stealing tests and I mean, just crazy stuff. Recording this thing on the, I had like one of those compact disc CD players. That's about the type. That was about when I was growing up, you know, in early 2000s. And I had all these answers recorded onto the CD. The only problem is the track was only a minute and a half long, so it really looked pretty bad, you know, as I'm filling out these things. Just like, I mean, they must have thought I was really smart or something, you know. And it's just crazy that I even passed. And you know, I doing a lot of drinking at school, leaving school to go get drunk, and managed to make it and go to college. And you know, that's where I started getting some really, you know, I was already borderline alcoholic. And then of course, you know, just like the first time I got drunk, the first time I get drunk in college, somebody drinks too much and I almost get in trouble. But you know, they gave me all these warning signs, you know, like this is what's going to happen. You're going to start losing stuff. You're going to keep getting in trouble. You know, you're going to start getting sick and feeling physical effects from your disease. And I didn't believe any of this stuff. And you know, the more and more it went on, the more and more all that stuff came true. It was like they had a crystal ball. It's like they've seen alcoholics before. It was madness. And so eventually I kind of get screwed up. I get kicked out of college. You know, I like to say I dropped out, but there was a meeting with the dean, and he said that I wasn't allowed to come back. So, you know, I got kicked out, and I started going to treatment centers, but I didn't actually want to stop drinking. I wanted all the, doing drugs, but I wanted all the fame and success from doing that from my family, you know, and I wanted to be able to keep my job and all that, but I didn't actually ever want to get clean. And it's just that cycle, just that's what happened. You know, I'd get sober for a month, go to treatment, come back out, and just repeat it over and over and over again. I'm a big like football fan, so I was thinking, it's like I was playing a football game every weekend, and every weekend I'm getting blown out like 60-0 by the fourth quarter, and with the last 2 minutes I score a touchdown. And after the game, you asked me how was it, and I think, you know, it wasn't so bad. You know, I scored that touchdown, it did okay. And by the next week, I already forgot that I lost the game, and it was just like that. I couldn't ever remember all the bad times, and I'd always keep fighting this thing, and never really kept doing it. And in the end, I think I went to 10 inpatient treatment centers, 1.5 times as many detoxes. Just, I always thought one day I'd wake up and then I'd want to be sober. And waking up each morning, I think I finally realized that probably wasn't going to happen. So I tried all these different things. But one day, I moved to a new town. I get the same stuff in a different town. You know, as long as I stay away from the drugs, I'll be all right. Well, you know, next thing that happens, somebody actually offers it to me. I'd spent my whole life looking for this stuff, and hardly ever do I just get. I mean, I tried to get clean, and people would just pull up on the street and ask me if I wanted to buy something. It was the weirdest thing, you know, and I had no defense against it. Thought I'd be all right if I just got a job and just would only drink beer on the weekends or whatever, and it just never worked out. You know, there's a lot of other crazy stuff that I probably won't share on the radio, but if you ever see me around, I'll let you know. But I was pretty wrecked up. I was the homeless guy on the side of the street with a sign, and I learned some things. You know, it's like there's some really nice people out there that'll help you out even when you're really down, and there's some people that just kind of don't see you, and that's cool too, you know. And then there's some people out there that are just really big jerks, and it's kind of the same way it is today. There's some really great people out there, some great people that help me. There's just normal everyday people, and then now that I'm sober, I gotta also learn how to deal with the jerks, you know, because I can. You never know who you're gonna be, you know. Say you're really into flipping people off while you're driving. You never know who that guy is, you know, whether he's having a bad day. Well, you know, whether he has a gun, you know, and it's like, what type of person do I want to be today? You know, I get a little bit of a say in that. And, you know, like recovery is kind of like life. So it's like, I get recovery and I get to be able to live my life. And sometimes it doesn't seem like it's very exciting, but you know, I just try to go to work and be a good employee. I try to just hang out with my friends when I get time. You know, I called my grandma on her 90th birthday party. I probably wouldn't even known that it was her 90th day birthday party, you know, just little stuff. And, you know, when there's snow, shovel the snow. It's not that big of a deal. It's nothing out of the ordinary. I'm not the only one. A couple things that help me get by on the day-to-day. So, like I said, I'm a big sports fan. And I'm watching basketball the other day. And I hear this great quote that kind of makes sense to me. And it's called, it says, "Don't worry about the mules, load the wagon." And that's the kind of stuff that helps me out through the day to day, because you have all these things in the world that I can't control, you know. So it's like, that's what that's saying. It's saying, you know, don't worry about the mules. Don't worry about any of that other crap. You know, I can't control the government. I can't control other people. Focus on loading the wagon. You know, what's in front of me right now? What do I got to do? And that's different each day. And that, what I really like about recovery is that I'm not stuck doing one thing. Part of living life is learning from your lessons. I was never any good at that before. To various degrees, good at it today. It depends on the day, you know. But the goal is that when I make a mistake, I can learn from it instead of just piling them on. And that's just basically all I used to do. So kind of a fun deal, really. You know, I got into golfing, and you know, I never thought, you know, I'd go from a guy in a tent listening to the radio to going golfing on the weekends. And I'm getting married, and that's crazy because I never thought that was going to be a thing. And then, you know, people are like, you know, all these different things in life are going to hit you. It's like, well, I realized I hadn't been to a wedding in 10 years. I have no idea how to do any of this stuff. And all of a sudden, there's like 90 people that are going to be coming. And it's like, I didn't even know that 90 people knew I existed. That was the craziest part. It deals with its own stressful stuff, but it's going to be really fun to see everybody. And you know, we're gonna have all ranges of people. It's kind of exciting. You know, yeah, people that drink, people that don't drink. It's gonna be a good thing. But I never thought in a million years I'd be standing here. It's just crazy being in the recovery center, because you know, I remember coming in here right before I got sober, and then there's some stuff reminds me of how crazy my life was. You know, like there's just things that I don't think about. And I got in trouble a long time ago, and I honestly forgot until I applied for this house that I had a criminal record, you know, because it's just not part of my life. I'm not worried about the six-pack I need to buy on the way home from work, which makes the trip home from work more enjoyable. I'm not really rushing anywhere. I'm not worried that if I don't have this thing or whatever that I'm gonna get sick. You know, it makes it so I don't break any laws. You know, when I drive my car, I mean, it seems like pretty simple stuff, but I don't get pulled over. Or if I do get pulled over, it doesn't matter. It was kind of funny, though, because right. Sometimes I'd black out while I was doing this stuff. And then so when I got pulled over for the first time in recovery, I was like, oh, I guess it's my friend's like, what's up? And I was like, well, I guess we're going to find out if I got any warrants. And it was just crazy. So it's all these different experiences, you know, it's just crazy to think that it could happen. And that's what I like about recovery is that it's open to anybody who really wants it. And you know, I can see some people in their addiction, and it's sometimes it sucks because you got to see them go through it, and there's not a whole lot I can really do. But if they want to get sober, then we can stay sober together. Like I'm always reminded that, you know, not only am I powerless to change other people, especially when it comes to addiction, drugs, and alcohol, I can't make anybody do anything. You know, I'm not the reason they're going to quit, but I can help them along their journey if they want, and that's kind of cool. I was always wondering, you know, where I fit being a drug addict and an alcoholic, and what I found is that, you know, in today's age, that there's a lot of me out there, and I got my story is not original. It's my story, but I've heard it from other people, you know, and it helps me to just remind me of the similarities, not the differences. That was probably one of the biggest things.
Wow, that's a lot to digest there, my friend.
if
we had 3 hours, we could probably do the whole thing. But yeah, I totally get that, and a lot of what you're talking about. Why don't we take a break, listen to a little music here, and then we'll come back, and Denise and I will grill you mercilessly about a little bit more.
Johnny
about
likes
your
to
recovery.
Be funny, so.
All right, so we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to KRFP 90.3 on your FM dial, the coolest station in the nation.
Up and I've been shut down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio on KRFP. I'm Radio Johnny. She's Denise, and we're in the storeroom studio with Corey, our guest today. And Corey is a man in recovery from addiction, and we had some questions for him. Interesting listening to you talk, but Denise had a little question she'd like to ask.
Corey, I was wondering if you would share with us what led you into recovery.
It's a good question, because it's like, where do you stop? You know, like I said, I went to 10 different treatment centers, just hoping that maybe that would spark it. You know, 15 detoxes, hoping that would spark it. Breaking up with the girlfriend, hoping that would spark it. New jobs, new places to live, and nothing ever sparked it. You know, a couple years ago, Tom Brady, about this time, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I'd have to look at the date, but I believe the Eagles beat him in the Super Bowl. And I think maybe it was the year before. And but he was in the Super Bowl, and I was in the hospital, and I told the hospital people that I was dying. They said that I was killing myself, and there's nothing they could really do for me. I didn't have any insurance. They didn't want me here. You know, they probably didn't realize how messed up I really was, and I probably didn't tell them. You know, I was the type of person they'd ask, you, "Who did? When's the last time you did this?" You know, and I'd be like, "Oh, you know, 8 hours ago." When the real answer was 30 minutes ago. I don't know why. I just couldn't tell the truth. And I went to bed that night, and I didn't think I was gonna wake up. And then I thought I was good to go. And the problem is that 2 weeks later, I was just as drunk and just as lit up on the other stuff. And that's just how it was. And then I realized I needed to do something different. And, you know, I'd tried a bunch of different stuff. And that's when I decided to, you know, a bunch of suggestions had been made in the past, either by the judge or treatment centers, was to go you know, find something that was going to work for me, whether that be church, AA, NA, basically anything. Maybe just stop. I don't know if that's how addiction works for anybody else, but it wasn't going to work for me. And I just decided to try one of these things that they had suggested, and just, you know, having an open mind about it, you know, and trying something different, because all I knew is that I knew how to get drunk, but I didn't know how to get sober and stay sober. So, you know, they asked me if I could stay sober for a year. I knew that was impossible, you know, but they also wanted to see if I could go do some controlled drinking.
Right.
That was impossible. You know what I mean? I knew what that was going to turn out like. And I just, I think it was just waking up that morning, realizing that there was nothing. And I know I talked about a football game a couple minutes ago, and I basically had to just stop playing the game. And that sounds really easy. But what I had to do is find that other people had done the same thing that could help me out, that had already quit. But I also had to stop going back to it. You know, they always say stay away from that first one. And that the reason that's important is because, you know, once I start that game, I got to finish it. I'm stuck playing, you know, till the end. Whatever that turns out to be, jail, hospital, or just in my apartment alone, you know, it didn't really matter. And so I had to stop playing. You know, I like to say I retired. You know, that's I could always play alcohol again if I really wanted to. I could always do these drugs, but, you know, that I used to not have the choice, but I have the choice now, and it's because of other people, essentially. And whatever, you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll talk about higher power, whatever. Whatever works out there for me happened to, you know, I probably put these people in my life at some point, but this time I actually did something different. So I don't know what really sparked it. You know, I'd probably felt worse at earlier times in my life, but that just happened to be the one. And I never quit, you know. You know, I asked this guy that's pretty close to me, like, what was the difference between this time and last time? And he said, you didn't give up.
Yeah.
That's an answer to the question.
I have. Yeah. I have, you know, I had a similar, just, I call it a moment of clarity, where, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night and realized that there wasn't enough booze left in the bottle to get me through to when the liquor store opened. And I finally took a real serious, honest look at myself and where I was and went, I can't live like this anymore. Not only did I not want to, I think I knew deep down inside that it really was killing me and that I really probably didn't have too much time left. And I had made lots of decisions to quit before, but never took any action. And so just taking the action of not picking up the drink was the first thing I did, you know, after I had that realization in my mind. So I totally get that. You know, what was it exactly? Well, it was just a realization that I can't do this anymore. And I think that's it for a lot of people, even people who, like, were in your situation, Denise, where you got locked up and physically could not
and got reading an NA book and realized I was an addict. Go figure. Didn't know I was an addict that whole, like, 10, 12 years. Talk about denial, dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'd heard about the program that I winded up entering into. And so here we go. Finally, some answers.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Corey, you brought up something that really turned on the alarm bells in my head. You talked about early on, you know, cheating the system and how much work it was to cheat as opposed to actually doing the work and getting by with it. And the reason it rang a bell with me is this, for some reason, the last few days, I was reflecting back on my years in high school. And I don't know if I've just blocked this out for years or what, but I never cracked a book in high school. I don't know how I graduated.
You were like,
I was able to.
My spouse.
I was able to pay attention. Like, you know, we had a structure of the high school I went to was very much like a college. You had a lecture group, you know, on any given, you know, discipline, with the exception of math and the hard sciences, but, you know, English, history, all those other ones, social studies, you had a large lecture class and then two small group classes during the week. Well, for somehow, I was able to absorb enough in those lecture classes to get by on the test. I was not an A student until I got into the electronics class that they started up. You know, I just snaked by, and it was like incredibly hard just because I didn't want to open the books and read the books. And then later on in life, dealing with my addiction, same thing. The amount of lying I had to do, just the lying, and keeping track of the lies, and who did I tell what lie to, absolutely exhausting. Couldn't I, and I wasn't any good at it. Mm-hmm. I tried. I thought I was good at it for a while, but, you know, eventually it catches up with you, you know.
Too many decades, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Sheepers. I'm excited about something else that you talked about. You talked about not having, you know, that you can't control anybody else. I used to be so exhausted trying to, like, help everybody and fix everybody and all these things. And, you know, it was just all up to me. And, oh, you know, so I'm just excited to the fact that, you know, I'm just in, I can control myself and my reactions. And I don't have to save the world. That is so great. Yeah. Yeah. My saving the world is in a totally different way these days. So.
That's right. Well, I heard of a book by a fellow who's an opinion guy on television. The name of his book is How I Saved the World. And basically, the book is about how he got his act together.
Right. That's all you can do.
So he saved the world from himself. And, you know, I think that's a lot about what you talked about, Corey, you know, because you went from... you know, being the guy on the street that was totally dependent on the kindness of other people, and also the victim of scorn for a lot of people, that you've transformed that into, hey, maybe we should go shovel somebody's driveway. I know an older lady that probably needs some help with this.
Mm-hmm. You know, you hear this a lot in recovery, one day at a time. And what I like about that is this, it's not that far-fetched of an idea for an addict or an alcoholic like me or anybody else. It's like, man, when I spent my last dollar on something else that wasn't even, you know, basically poison for me and didn't care where I was getting the next one, that's living, like, one day at a time, you know? So it's like, and it's not making it too complicated. And that this is the easier, you know, they say it's the easier, softer way. It is a lot easier. And, man, there's something great about that story that you just told me. I was watching the news the other day, because sometimes you get reminded of your past in weird ways. You know, get a little perspective. You know, it happens around holidays. And so I'm watching TV, and that somebody had, you know, spray painted some nasty stuff on the CWU library. And I looked at my girlfriend, and I said, you know, I went to school there for 5 years, and I can't tell you where that building is. I can tell you where all the parties were at. I can tell you where I almost got kicked out of college. I can show you where I used to work. I can show you all this other stuff. But I couldn't tell you where the library was. And I didn't fail out until the fifth year, you know? And it was so much easier. And, you know, I'm kind of one of those rebel guys. I kind of like getting back at the system. Something I had to kind of learn to deal with, you know, at, kind of have to pay taxes now, you know. I have a real job, you know. Follow, you know, tabs for my car. It's kind of frustrating, but it is a lot easier than having to, you know. Part of me still thinks about how it was pretty cool to go do that back in high school. But if I'm being honest with myself, you know what I mean, because I thought I was pretty slick back in the day. If sure. To be honest, it was so much more work. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and it always is. And I like how you brought up the idea of that one day at a time, you know. Mm-hmm. When I first got sober, it wasn't one day at a time. It was
minute
to minute.
Yeah, sometimes it's just like a minute.
Because that liquor store in my head just kept saying, come on, man, this is too hard. You can.
And there's so many emotions.
We have got a great way to deal with it. Just come on down and just, you know, pick up. a little something.
Mm-hmm. It's like you're dealing with life without that, and there's so many new emotions that you could just barely even handle. You've got to get used to living without it, and it gets easier as time rolls on.
Right.
But yeah, it can be like a minute. It can be hard.
I probably lived my whole life maybe crying at like 5 movies tops. And since I've been in recovery, I think I can make it up to at least 10. But right before that, it's just weird stuff happens on a weird... I watched this movie, Casper, the Friendly Ghost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I just got older or what, you know. But I mean, that movie just wrecked me.
See, it's emotions. All the emotions are starting to come out.
Sad. Yeah.
There are parts of Casper that are sad. There are.
It's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Make him into a real guy and then take it right back.
Right.
You're like, what in the world are you guys doing? Yeah.
Well, when both my parents passed away, I was that was actually when I was probably in the deepest part of my drinking and coincidental depression that goes along with it. Because usually those things are hand in hand, or at least in my case they were. And yeah, I grieved for my parents' passing. We were reasonably close. And I actually grieved more out loud, more openly, when my two little dogs passed a couple of years ago. And it pops into my mind every once in a while, usually when I'm trying to go to sleep. And last night, you know, and I started getting teared up. But that never happened with my parents, not on that level.
You can feel all the feelings now.
Exactly. That's where they say you're going to be able, you come into a program. My program was AA. I came into the program. Somebody said, you know, you're going to feel better. You're going to feel pain better. You're going to feel sorrow better. You're going to feel things and emotions better. And it's going to suck, but we're going to show you how to deal with it. We're going to give you a plan for living. And that's why, for me, that 12-step program worked really good. And most of them do, really, if you're willing to work it. I mean, what's that old saying? It works if you work it. Some of you will hear that in meetings.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Kiss, yeah, keep it simple, stupid, yeah.
It works if you work it. And I always hear a great one called... keep coming back, because I was pretty wrecked up. I didn't really think people wanted me around. I was like, you sure? And but what I've also heard is you don't always hear this at the meeting or whatever. And but just keep coming back if you make it, because you know it's fun to joke about some of the crazy stuff that happened back in the day. But I mean, it really is a life or death type.
I think for meetings and stuff like that, the people who've been there for a while, I think that helps inspire people that are new.
Yeah.
And I think the newcomer helps remind the person who's been in for a while why it is, you know, that they want to stay in recovery, because they remember that stuff. It's super helpful.
Yeah. And it's just that little stuff. One of my favorite ones is, I don't even think it's owned by anybody, but it's that this too shall pass. And I got to remember that when times are good. And I got to remember that when times are bad, because there's one thing that's always the same in the world is things are going to change. My situation is going to be different. You know, if I'm feeling down, you know, I'm probably not going to be feeling down for the rest of all time. And but it also, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, my baseball team's going to win the World Series. That would be a pretty amazing accomplishment. But and sometimes I just got to be okay with it. It's not always going to be this good either. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, that's just one of the things. You have this part of living life. You know, I don't get to just blot that all away.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I know the feeling. I need to live in the here and now, but I need to realize that this is not always going to be the here and now. Mm-hmm. You know, what I'm dealing with right now, because I'm in recovery, because I'm sober today, I have the choice in how I'm going to deal with things. Mm-hmm. If my football team, you know, tanks out in the middle of the season, it doesn't mean I'm not going to watch them play the rest of the season. It just means, well, they're not going to the playoffs this year, just despite what I would like, despite what my vision of the future would be. And my experience is, my vision of the future is only limited to what I'm going to be doing in the future. And if I can affect something positive on that, then great. But I can't predict and or change what's going to happen in Denise's future.
Nope.
The amount of effect I'm going to have on Corey is going to be minimal, other than, you know, encouraging him to maintain his sobriety and tell me some more great stories. Oh my God, he's got some great stories. Nice. Most of them we can't tell on the radio.
That's fair. That's okay.
Because they involve a few F-bombs, but only for punctuation.
Right.
Hopefully I didn't drop too many. I mean, I used to be...
I think you did fine. Yeah. You're good. I don't think you dropped any. Good job.
It was bound to happen, but...
Well, not that anybody's going to hear.
That's right.
Because of the magic editing fingers, because we are pre-recorded for this time slot. There was one other thing, if I can think of it. When you were in college and you said you told people you dropped out, when the reality is you were asked to leave. I can absolutely relate, not to that specific thing, but I can relate to how I used to tell people a much different story than what reality was. I mean, the end product was, and now I don't do that anymore, or, you know, I used to do this when maybe I dabbled in that, but, you know, I wasn't really proficient. Basically being a hustler, you know, and that's how I look at myself in a lot of ways. Not that all those things are bad. You know, when you go to a job interview and they ask you, do you know this, this, and this? And you go, oh, yeah, piece of cake. And in your brain, you're going, man, I'm going to have to hit Google when I get home because I don't know what any of that was. So, you know, our desire to make ourselves seem greater than, boy, isn't that a tripwire.
Mm-hmm. It's like the old George Costanza lie. It's not a lie if you believe it. You know, I was all, and if I tell the story 50 times in my head, I change it just a little bit 50 times in a row, and then I almost forget the real story. There's a great book out there. Oh, sorry. They're talking about, did this actually really happen? The guy's like, parts of it. He's like, but I had to change it for the art of the storytelling, you know?
Right.
And it's like, so it's like when you start getting sober, you start realizing all these lies you told. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a while, it's like, I might have actually believed it. Mm-hmm. I dropped out. It's like, no, I woke up one day sober and kind of remembered how things actually went down. I didn't have a choice.
That's right. Yeah, and that's so crazy. And that's, I mean, one of the beauties of recovery, too, is the fact that we get to go back and review our life and really take a serious look at it. In AA, mm-hmm. that fourth step, rigorous and searching mm-hmm. moral inventory of
very
ourselves.
Helpful.
Yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow, so to speak.
Yeah, but I mean, it can lead to freedom. So
well, and that's it. That's mm-hmm. what it's all about: cleaning up your side of the street and making amends and moving forward, mm-hmm. and hopefully not putting yourself in that situation again.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I remember when I was in jail. I felt freer in jail because I didn't have to go search for all this crap the whole time. Like, I felt freer just being able to wake up, eat food, and play games, and, you know, take a shower. Like, I felt freer than I did when I lived in my tent. And you'd think somebody living in a tent would feel pretty free. I could literally do whatever I wanted.
Right.
Except I was, you know, I didn't have this. You know, my higher power was drugs and alcohol. Like, I had to do that, and then everything else was just based around that. And it's like, I like what you said there, freedom. Like, that's what it is.
Yeah,
that's what recovery is. I could do whatever I want, but I also have to pay for the consequences if I decide to screw it up.
That's right. Well, we are about up against the clock here. Do you have anything to add in there at the end, Miss Denise?
Well, I just really appreciate you coming and sharing your story, Corey. We're so glad that you could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, and on short notice, too. Corey was filling in for a guest that had some other obligations pop up, so really appreciate that you could come
really
in
cool.
and do
thanks.
That. And thanks to you, Denise.
Thanks, Johnny.
And we'll close with the regular. You know, if you think you have a problem with drugs or alcohol or mental health issues, Well, you do.
Good.